Final hour overdrive continues. Darren Dreger, Josh Lewenberg later this hour. Our picks for the golf tournament down in Palm Springs later this hour.
You feeling talk it? About that. I looked at the Sony and Lucas Glover was like right at the bottom of the odds. And I'm like, I want to sniff around on that because that guy could tee it up and win. And I think he top 10'd it. Mm-hmm. But then the tournament's over and you're like, I was going to put $1,000 on it. I'm like, there you go. You would have just wiped your...
Well, what you can do with golf bets is you can bet top five and top tens, right? Now, the odds are adjusted. You're not going to get great odds on that. But you are if it's a long shot. If you get someone like...
Oh, he was clearly a long shot at the beginning of the week. But that guy's a proven winner. That guy won the U.S. Open at Bethpage Black.
That's right. Well, Kevin Kisner, you see his stats all weekend? Like, if he plays a pitch and putt, the guy's the best player in the world.
I know.
Like, you put him on a course that's 6,400 yards, he's Tiger. But
dude, he's basically come out in a presser and said, there are some courses I don't even bother showing up to.
Can't hit it.
They're too long and I can't. And he said, I do show up at some, and the guy asked him why, and he's like, because I pay a boatload of money for 20.
Exactly. Come in 20th and you make some money. Because they were showing that stat all weekend where any course 7,100 or under, Kisner is like the fourth best player in the world or something. And yet you don't see that many courses that are at that length anymore, right?
He's a modern-day Fred Funk, man. Just down the middle, good putter, dialed in.
Yeah, Fred Funk. Stuart Sink is, man, you talk about a resurgence of his career. He was in the mix again.
I know.
Over the weekend. Like, Stuart Sink, he's legit, man. We'll see. He had a couple of wins last year on tour. So we'll see. Anyway, we'll get to the American Express and those picks a little bit later this hour. Al's brother and I, we put forth our list of, you know, the top seven players based on the North American sports scene. We're getting people responding saying, you don't have anyone from cricket. It's like, yeah, I know. We don't talk about cricket,
right?
You know, or European soccer. Yes, we don't have Messi or Ronaldo or whatever on the list. We're talking the big four sports in North America, golf and tennis, basically. That's on our radar. That's what we talk about a lot. And neither of us had a golfer. Neither of us had John Rahm or Nelly Korda. I thought about putting Nelly in there, but Nelly didn't even end up winning the Player of the Year last year. Mm-mm. So, you know, it's a bit of a tight race both on the men's and women's side of the golf world right now.
I got to be honest. I don't know if I can weigh in on the list. I never really got the opportunity.
Yeah,
but
please do. Please do.
I thought the lists were good. Where AB lost me was, like I said, Aaron Donald. For me, that's position specific. And that's, you know, he is the best, but that's like me saying, you know, Vasilevsky. I said that earlier. Vasilevsky as opposed to McDavid, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, you're looking for overall general greatness.
Right. And, you know, Curry, again, three-point shooting, but is it Curry you want or is it Durant?
Steph at number one. Like, I love Steph
That
Curry.
Was rich.
But
that was
that's
rich.
Just ridiculous. Rich
Dude,
is
it's not
ridiculous.
I'm
it
sorry.
Is. Steph
it's
Curry not. Is not the number one athlete and player right now. In terms of dominance, he's not. Like, he's in a race for the MVP. Ja Morant may have passed him right now. The way Ja Morant's been playing and what's been going on down there. And Jokic
is there. So you're taking my
Giannis.
Guy Ja Morant now.
Listen, Steph Curry has not been playing as well recently. Like the last
well,
month,
the team
so,
has been struggling.
Off.
They lost four or right. five, but that doesn't mean that Steph Curry is not going to be involved in the MVP race.
Great player, but it's not defined. Like he's not. You cannot argue with me that Steph Curry is defined as the greatest player in the NBA. He's not.
Right.
Like I believe KD's better. I think Giannis is better, more dominant. I think Jokic is as dominant. He's a great player. He's an all-time great player, and he is a specialty player in many ways because of what he brings to the table. But Steph Curry is not the equivalent of what I believe Djokovic is to tennis, what I believe McDavid is to the hockey world, Mike Trout is to baseball.
Right.
I don't think he's in that category.
That's why Donald and Curry, like I thought Curry, if you had Curry at seven, maybe it's a little quieter.
Sure.
He had him at one, right?
Right. It's being
so that
heroic.
Was, right, that was my two, Donald and Curry, based on, you know, where, you know, Donald position specific, Curry mm-hmm. too high on the list.
That's where is the Twitter world? Where are they on the voting? Did we put it up? Did we pitch you against each other?
No, I don't think we did.
I think what happened was people were very frustrated. I'm reading some of the feedback. There were a lot of people frustrated with AB's list.
Yeah, and you know, listen, as I said, we're talking NHL, NBA, NFL, MLB, golf, tennis. You know, people are writing in being like, where's Damian Warner? It's, okay, right. Thank you. Like, just, we're not talking right. about the Olympics.
Dude, that's 2022. All people do is they look at that. We're just trying to provide some content here.
I know.
And all they complain about is who's not there.
Right.
It's like, give it a rest.
How do you not have a curler? Someone wrote in and said, curling? Oh, yeah. Curling, question mark? Dregs would have a curler.
Nah,
Dregs probably would.
Gushu. He's a Gushu guy.
Yeah, if you're a prairie guy, you know, you got to be a fan of some sort of curler, I guess. Here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. Were you a curling super fan growing up, Dregs, or what?
Yeah, not a super fan, but a fan, no doubt about that. Just thinking names that come to mind, Jeff Stoughton, who was a terrific curler out of Winnipeg.
Let me guess, that guy had a mustache. I can tell the name, Jeff Stoughton.
No, hey, I'll tell you, Vic Peters had a mustache. Sandra Schmirler, God rest her soul, she was a terrific curler.
Wasn't there a Kevin Martin or something like that? Wasn't he like the Wayne Gretzky of curling?
Hold on a second.
Yeah, Kevin Martin, come on.
Kevin Martin is on TV. He's at the other network. He's an analyst of curling.
But I'm saying, wasn't he like the greatest curler of all? Like, somebody told me, and might have been Mudrick that told me he was like the Wayne Gretzky of curling. Maybe I'm
wrong. You're from Edmonton. You're supposed to know this too, Noodles. Like, I'll stereotype. Anyone west of, you know, should know these kind of things.
The bald guy is the Gretzky of curling. Who's that guy, Dregs? Howard.
Russ Howard.
Old Rusty knows how to curl.
TSN forever. You guys are just outing yourselves.
Oh, I'll be the first to admit it, Dregs. I don't know a lot about it. I'm looking up Vic Peters. This guy's got great style. He's got a stash.
Same with me. I mean, I'm
post,
from out west.
Post Vicky Peters. I want to see
Vic
it.
Vic Peters. He was a three-time Manitoba curling champ. There you go.
I don't think he's with us.
He passed away at 16. Yeah. I'm looking that up right now. But some great styles,
good
a smash, and great curler. Exactly. Yeah.
He was cool. I covered a few of his events early in my career, back in my Brandon, Manitoba, Winnipeg, Manitoba days.
What is with the drinking, Dregs? Like, people say you go to a curling event, everyone's just getting gooned. Like, even the people curling. Is that true?
No. Well, I would say most days it's not true. So you guys have heard of the Brier, of course. It's the men's curling championship, right? The Canadian
yes,
men's
we're
curling
familiar
championship.
With that. Yes.
All right. Well, I'm just making sure because this thing has gone sideways since the beginning of the conversation. I think the Brier patch still exists. And normally it's just like a big hall or convention center, or historically it could be a big outdoor tent, right? And, man, people, fans, curlers, media, you'd pile in there. I can't remember what the hell it was, but it was back in the day, my early days. I shouldn't even admit this, but you got a certain media symbol if you drank a minimum of 100 beers in 7 days.
Wow.
The weight.
Now, do the math.
Yeah.
That's a lot of beers. And I bowed out like on day four. I couldn't do it anymore. So,
that's like the heavyweight would set the tone on day one with like 28 beers, right? Set it and be like, all right, now I'm on cruise control. Just a few each day, and I'll get whatever I need to get. Yeah, we're into it. Curling, we're into
it. Okay, you got to watch some of it, man.
Well, I've seen it. I don't really follow it close enough. Like, Bob Weeks is the insider. He's the Dregs of the curling world. There was.
Hey, hold on. Bobby Weeks and I used to hang back in the day in the early curling days. Have him on sometime. He'll tell you some crazy stories. I've got a story I cannot tell. I'll never tell. I'll tell you in private. It was a wild one.
Yeah, need it. Nice. I think Weeks is in, like, the curling hall of fame, like just a
yeah. He is, man. He is.
Yeah, the Foster Hewitt of curling is Bob Weeks.
Legend.
with Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider. So what are you hearing in terms of the reaction league-wide with this schedule that's been released from the NHL in February and the back-to-backs and 3 and 4? It's going to be a wild scene, man. It's a short month to begin with. It's going to go by quick for a lot of these teams.
Yeah, and look, like a couple of Canadian teams, you know, jump out at you automatically. Like, I looked at Winnipeg's schedule. They've got a stretch of where they play 14 games in 19 days. four games in like 5.5 days, and then I think a total of 16 in the month of March. So Winnipeg's really going to, you know, they're going to be ground into submission in this. And they're expecting bad news on Nikolaj Ehlers. I don't know if you guys saw the hit with Orlov last night, hence the hearing. But they're waiting on an MRI in Nashville, and doesn't sound very good there. And then Ottawa, I think Ottawa has 50 games in the 100 days remaining. And they have a total of, 15 games being rescheduled. But look, you know, I mean, from a Canadian team perspective, the rescheduling was done with good intentions financially, right? You know, they're trying to buy time so that the Ontario government loosens capacity restrictions, and likewise across the country. So most managers are appreciative of that. They understand it from a business perspective, but they're worried. You know, they're worried about how tight the schedule is going to be. Not going to have any practice time. Guys are going to get hurt. There's a lot of concern, but they also understand that there's not a whole heck of a lot the NHL could do otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the nature of COVID, and trying, you got to get the games in. Everyone's got to play. And if you're battling for a playoff position, you mentioned Winnipeg.
Yeah.
That's got to be nerve-wracking, because they're not a lock to make the playoffs. They are not a lock. And they've got to more than just survive in February. Like, you look at a team like the Leafs, who are the most comfortable Canadian team. They're well into a playoff spot. You lose a few here or there, okay. You know, dust yourself off, move on. You do not have that luxury if you're Winnipeg, if you're Edmonton or Calgary.
No.
Like, you got to get your wins. You got to play well.
Well, and then look, the other aspect of this is, again, we know it can't be perfect, but as I was reminded by the majority of managers that I reached out to as soon as the news came out from the league, it's evolving. So even though this is best intention, here's the schedule that all these teams are thankful that they at least have so they can work with. You know, the National Hockey League was quick to inform, all right, here's best case scenario, even though it's not best case for many of you. It's what we have to work with today. It could change very quickly and suddenly, you know, because of whatever COVID-related issues that the National Hockey League and Players Association are going to have to address.
Dregs, without beating a dead horse, we've talked to everyone about the Leon Draisaitl, Jim Matheson exchange. Yeah. What did you make of it? I mean, where do you think that goes?
Yeah.
Have you had any contentious conversations like that? Were you ever placed in that situation or had something like that happen with a player or a manager?
Or a curler
Curler?
Oh, I've had lots of battles with managers and coaches over the years, more managers than coaches. Brian Burke one time called me. It was years and years and years ago. Naslin was hurt in Vancouver. Burkey was the general manager. And I made light of it on the panel I was hosting at the time. And Nick Kiprios was on with me, I think, John Garrett, Scotty Morrison. And we didn't make light of the injury. I think the point was, when the Canucks left the dressing room, they tapped Marcus Naslin's sweater on the way out. And I just flippantly asked, I mean, like, what's that supposed to do? Like, does it inspire you? Like, what happens? And we kind of had a segment on it, and Berkey went wild. Like, called me the next morning. I was feeding my daughter. She's a young girl at the time, and F-bombs were flying, went sideways, and I fought back. And I said, look, I'm not going to have this conversation with you now. Let's do it on the air. You know, I'll be in later today. Let's do it on camera. And he basically hung up on me, and then about 10 minutes later, T.C. Carling, who was in media relations, called me back, and he said, Berkey wants to know if you're good. Everything okay? So I've had a few of those over the years, but not like this one. What's weird about this one, you know, people are saying, well, you know, it's the breakdown with the Zoom and all of that. But there's no Zoom here. Jim Matheson was sitting in the front row with Leon Draisaitl right in front of him in the interview room in Edmonton. There were people missing for a variety of reasons, so it was a smaller media contingent than normal. And to apply context here, like, Matty asked, what, 5 questions in a row? And that was largely because, again, you know, there were only a handful of reporters there, so he just kept peppering. Now, the flip side to it is there are some who would probably know who just think that the media, and Jim Matheson among them, have it in and have had it out for Mikko Koskinen through much of this year, dating back to last year. And Leon, as a leader and apparently a good friend of Koskinen, has taken that personally, and he's very protective. So maybe this was his opportunity. Frankly, I didn't like it for either man. I thought it was a bad look.
Well, yeah. What happens here, Dregs, if they're playing tomorrow, they get smoked tomorrow night? You know, we paint a picture for you. They get smoked tomorrow. They lose the next two or three. Yeah. How does it just keep going, you know? Like,
yeah.
Holland came out a week ago or whatever, tried to patch things up and say the answer's in the room, all that stuff. But how much longer does it keep going, status quo?
Well, look, we did insider trading last night, and my sources reiterated that ownership and management is still invested in the group. They believe in that group, but they're terrified of what the next couple of games potentially could look like for the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, is there a place where Holland gets backed into a corner where he has no choice but to make a coaching change? That seems to be the most obvious and potentially the easiest, but what do you do? You know, do you elevate Glenn Gullitson? Do you look outside? I mean, there's been the Babcock rumor for a long time. Two things come to mind. I don't think, number one, Mike Babcock is interested, at least not yet. Maybe next year we'll see. Is he going to handpick if he has that luxury and maybe look at an American city where there's less attention than there would be in his second Canadian market? Probably. If you're McDavid, Draisaitl, have you done your homework? You know, are you voicing your concern over the potential of the coaching change, especially with all the speculation swirling around the last few weeks about Babcock? So if it isn't Babcock, who is it? You know, Paul Maurice isn't coaching this season. Maybe next year, but he's not going to do that to Winnipeg. So is a coaching change going to change the way this team plays? Because the number one thing that I've pulled a number of teams that have played recently against the Edmonton Oilers. Everybody says the same thing. They're easy to play against. They're borderline soft. I mean, that's an indictment on those players. So is coaching going to change their approach? I'm not so sure. But to your point, Brian, something's going to have to change if it gets worse.
Darren, Jamie was brought up the name Klingberg. What is the status there? Like, I find it hard to believe where Dallas is just like, okay, we're walking away from this.
Yeah,
from this piece.
It just feels like, you know, that you've got obviously a disgruntled player. I mean, John Klingberg made that abundantly clear recently when he acknowledged publicly his displeasure over not being furnished with the contract extension, really having no meaningful talks. That's not to say that they're not going to engage, even though now maybe it feels like it's most likely. I mean, I feel like it's most likely that Klingberg gets traded. I think that he's okay with that. But I also don't want to detach him from the list of other pending unrestricted free agent defensemen who could be in play. It's still a little bit early here. Now, Dallas has some work to do to figure out what direction they're going as well. I think that you could see an overhaul in Dallas, and maybe it starts at the trade deadline. And I'm not talking about a fire sale per se. Let's see where the Dallas Stars are as you get closer to March 21st. But I think everything's up in the air. Management, coaching, obviously the core of that team. I think everything is basically up in the air with the Stars.
Yeah, and that's a team that They've been in the mix in the West for a while. I mean, in the bubble, they were in that cup final. But does feel like they've got some young players who are kind of taking over. And then they got the vets. Like, you know, Sagan's been there forever. Ben's been there forever. Now, you know, Pavelski, Radulov has not had a good year at all. So, you know, are we talking big dogs? Like, I don't know what Sagan's got a lot of term left on his deal. Now he's got injury issues, and I don't know.
I don't know if you're talking about that, Brian, but I just, you know, because you're right. Some of those guys are going to be hard to move contractually, but, you know, what they've been trying to do has been pretty good, but obviously not good enough. And you've got a fairly demanding owner, I would say, there in the Gilardi family. So it just smells like change is coming in different ways there.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I mean, the deadline is a lot of other things are moving around, but it's going to stay, I believe, at March 21st. So yeah, we're a couple months away from that. All right, Dregs, great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Okay, guys, have a good night.
Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider. Yeah, we established that earlier, that there's 8 or 10 teams in the league right now that you would think are ready to talk trades, you know, or at least working on their list of who they want to keep and who they want to let go. A few of them up here in Canada, like Montreal, I'm sure is dealing with that right now. Ottawa would be dealing with that.
Just a fascinating cycle. Little hint of success, young stars, pay them all. Nothing happens, and then you get into the cycle where you're like, we got to get rid of these guys. Mm-hmm. Crazy, man.
Well, the marketplace dictates that too. You know, you get a guy who scores 35, 40 goals, and you put him up against the other guy who does that. And if that other guy's on a winning team, it doesn't matter. It's a marketplace. It's what you put forth. That's really what it is. You know, that's... I mean, guys go out and make money. Every team's got to pay them regardless. You know, 35 goal scorers on Ottawa or like Montreal, Mike Hoffman, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you got to pay these guys to bring them in, regardless if your team is in a playoff battle or not. And then the other thing, too, is the floor. You got to get to the floor, some of these teams. I'm circled Seattle to see what they're going to do. Obviously, they would be sellers. But, you know, what is the marketplace for Mark Giordano? You know, and what is Gio, 38, I believe.
Yeah, he's 38. He's turning 39.
Right. So, you know, you just talked about Chara at the start of the show. You know, he turns 45 in March. So by the playoffs, he'll be a 45-year-old defenseman. You know, certainly with a reputation.
Yeah, and a contract that will expire. Is Giordano this the last year of his deal?
I believe he does. I have to take a quick peek, but yeah, I thought
Giordano
had an expiration.
And I think that will change things. Also, right? Like, if it's a one-year deal, then...
Right.
Because I'm looking at Dallas right now. Pavelski's a UFA after this year. That's a guy that'll get flipped. Like, someone... Now, it's going to be it's a big ticket. It's at $7 million. But I would think that's a guy that people will kick tires on. I mentioned Radulov, who's currently injured, I believe, right now. But
Those are the guys you want. If you could ever... Just like last year in Columbus, where my thought process was, go ahead and get Savard and Foligno. They got Foligno. It didn't work out. He got injured. But if you can pick off Pavelski for a playoff run in Klingberg, that's what I'm talking
that's
about.
That's probably going to go a long way for you. Yeah. Seattle has been, man, what a mess. Like that, I'm curious what the reaction is in, because they get compared to Vegas. That's the only comparison you can make is Vegas. Vegas went to a cup final their first year. Seattle's going to finish bottom five.
They weren't going to be a Vegas. You just knew that wasn't going to happen again. And all the cartoon drawers, they wanted this and they wanted that. And
that goalie contract is coming back to haunt them, though. They are not. How can you not be just furious with Grubauer? Like, he's been. Pretty horrendous.
But you're right. It's a scenario, though. He went from Colorado to Seattle.
What did they give him, 5 or 6 years? 6.5 or something?
Yeah, I did the numbers. He got $10 million guaranteed to go to Seattle because he got an extra year and $1 million more a year from what I heard out of Colorado. My understanding
now he's stuck there because you can't get rid of him.
Well, and thing is, you know, I think Ronnie Francis was trying to go, hey, I'm going to get Driger. I'm going to get Grubauer. I want good goaltending for a team that could try and, you know, just hang around. And if my goaltending can give me an opportunity night in and night out. They give Adam Larson some term. They give Oleksiak some term. They get Giordano to, you know, to wear the C, all of that type of stuff. But I think their intentions was to grab guys on value contracts that you can turn at the deadline and build. Like this, I didn't see Vegas. Like, managers weren't making deals to go, hey, I'm going to give you Shea Theodore to not touch Josh Manson type of thing. Like, that's...
No, I know, but...
That wasn't happening.
It wasn't happening. They did not... Now, maybe they weren't investigating it the same way that Vegas' front office was. Maybe they weren't poking and prodding the same way. Who knows? I would think it's more likely that the teams learned from their mistakes.
Absolutely.
And so we're not doing it again. For sure, but Grubauer was a free agent that they signed.
Well,
they didn't take him from Colorado in the expansion draft. They signed him as a free agent. They gave him 5.9 for 6 years.
So $1 million more. Jeez. My understanding is that he was offered 5 times 5 in Colorado. He took basically 6 times 6.
Good for him.
Right.
You made your money, you're good.
Right.
But if you're Ron Francis in the Seattle Kraken, you have to be thinking, what the hell are we doing now? Well, like we're stuck with a contract already. And if you were if you weren't thinking you could be Vegas, why would you do it?
Well, you got to. I mean, you know, you got to build your organization. Grubauer was a good goaltender last couple of years, and you still have to get to the floor.
Like maybe next year when they're a little bit better, who knows? They bring in a couple more guys.
That's what I was
thinking. Settles down. Who knows?
You're
hoping. You're begging now.
I think Grubauer's a good goaltender. I don't think he's elite. So I think what they did is they grabbed a guy that could stop pucks. And you're right. Maybe year three, it's like, hey, this guy's a good goaltender. We got a better team. Now we've still got a goalie on term. I think it was when Matt Murray was traded for, and this is an extreme example, you weren't trading for Matt Murray last year. You were hoping that he comes in and grows with the team at 26 years old. Now, 6.25, you could argue that. A four-year term, you can argue that. Yeah. But really, it has, you know.
Mess.
Well, and he's, yeah, I don't know if you
he's
saw.
He's down in they're in Pittsburgh tomorrow. I think he's making the trip but won't play.
Well, yeah, he was sick last night. He didn't play last night with a non-COVID-related sickness and didn't skate this morning today from what I read. But, you know, that's unfortunate.
I hate to say it, but the guy doesn't want to play hockey. I'm sorry. He doesn't want to play hockey.
I don't know what the deal is.
There's no other way around it. You can't watch this nonsense. Oh, COVID comes back, lets in five goals, pulls the pin before warm-up. It's just he doesn't want to play. There's something going on there. Doesn't want to play.
Well, and can you imagine, like, Edmonton was dying for him to not be available. Like, he played unbelievable in Alberta. I was at the game in Ottawa. I'm sorry, at the game in Calgary. He was outstanding. Like, right. He was the difference. He outplayed Markstrom that
night.
That's
the thing. He's back in the NHL, yeah.
Right. And he was brilliant against Calgary. I thought he was great against Edmonton. Edmonton just didn't get the saves that they needed. And it's unfortunate. But at the end of the day, you're looking for him to be a stable position there. You know, a year or two from now when these young kids kind of get to that next level, you know, and it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, you have to time that out perfectly, you know, right. and you better believe that guy is going to be elite at that point.
He's the guy, right.
That's another thing, because chances are you can find another Grubauer in 2 years or another Matt Murray in 2 years.
Right.
Like that's, and you're just, the timing hasn't worked. Like Ottawa, Murray's been in Ottawa for 2 years now. They're still one of the worst teams in the league. They're not right. Next year. They're not a competitive team. I don't see it. I don't see stepping stones, and well, I don't see it in Seattle. So,
well, you can't see stepping stones when the guy that you paid $6 million to play goal is got the sniffles,
help.
Can't play, and when he goes in, he can't stop a puck, and he shows up for two games a month. You're screwed. You have zero chance. Zero. Over. Done.
Doesn't help, yeah. But there's deeper issues. And Ottawa's not a great roster.
They need better players, sure. They need to build around those good players up front and Shabbat. They need better players around that, no question.
And they've got a couple kids coming, too. Apparently this Sandy's boy, Jeff Sanderson's boy, Jake, is. Sounds like he's a player.
Be a good
he's up
player.
For, I think he's up for the Hobie this year. Like
yeah.
That
better
type
be. Fifth
of player.
Overall. Something's got to give.
Yeah.
You know, they've been saying that for years. Kids coming. You got to turn the corner at some point in Ottawa. I don't think I'm saying anything outlandish. You know, like at some point, you got to go. They've been bad for a few years, and they're there again this year. Josh Lewenberg will join us. The Raptors are in Dallas tonight, taking on the Mavs, and, you know, they're coming off a loss the other night in Miami. Kyle Lowry did not play. We'll get Josh's take on that, what we can expect when the Raptors return home. And Miami will be up here, I think, in a couple of weeks. So we'll look ahead to that game as well with Josh. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, the Raptors in Dallas tonight, taking on the Mavericks. And I saw earlier today, I think it was up on NBA TV, they were going back and forth, KG and others, on who you would start your franchise with. And would it be Luka Doncic? Would it be Ja Morant? And, you know, when you think of young studs in the NBA, those are two guys kind of leading the charge right now.
Well, when Luka was in the bubble down in Orlando, he was out of his mind good.
Yeah.
Like, he was the best player in the world.
He's a triple-double machine, you know, which Russell Westbrook was that guy, still is that guy in many ways. That doesn't mean you're going to win titles, and it doesn't mean that you're all around the best player necessarily. Your triple-double today does not mean what it did 20 or 30 years ago.
I'd like to see Luka tip-top shape. I don't think he's there.
I'm not sure he is either. Here's our Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg. Where does Luka rank for you in terms of must-see, Josh, and in terms of a building block in the NBA?
Pretty high. You mentioned two guys. You can't go wrong with either of them in Morant and Doncic. I do worry a little bit about Ja. We've already seen him get hurt a few times, and it almost reminds me of like Derrick Rose, just in terms of his style of play and how reckless he can be sometimes, reckless in a good and fun way if you're a basketball fan, but in terms of his overall durability over the course of his career, I worry a little bit about that. But there isn't a player in the NBA that I would rather watch right now than Ja Morant, and Luka Doncic is probably, I mean, he's easily in the top five of that list right now, and I mean, probably pretty close to two or three, just given all the different things he can do on the floor and how much he impacts the game. And with that said, I mean, Dallas has been a little bit disappointing this year. I think to your point, oh, I'm not sure that Luka's been in tip-top 100% game shape this year, because the Mavs, I think going into this season, looked at themselves as a championship contender, and they've been closer to a 500 team, a middle-tiered playoff team, than they have been a contender so far this year.
And this will be an opportunity for the Raptors to bounce back. You know, they had I thought they played well the other night, and it feels like we talk about the bench or the lack thereof and the minutes being dispersed on almost a daily basis here, and it was more extreme the other night than it has been at any point this season. There were seven guys that hit the court. Six of them played all night. Like, it's basically a six-man rotation right now for Nick Nurse, and that can't possibly continue, but will it possibly continue tonight?
It might, if Gary Trent isn't playing. We know that Kem Birch is out, so there's one guy that we know Nick Nurse trusts that's in his circle of trust in his rotation that's not going to be around. And if Gary Trent isn't playing, then yeah, I mean, the six guys that primarily played the minutes the other night, that just speaks to how many guys in this rotation or on this roster that Nurse trusts right now. It's tough. Because I agree with you, I don't think it's a sustainable thing over a long period of time, especially going into the second half of the season with this jam-packed schedule where the Raptors are already making up games. They had three of them postponed that they've got to make up here. So you're playing a lot of games in a short amount of time. You're already asking a lot from your starters, and to be playing Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam 42-plus minutes every other night, in some cases every night, like that's not going to work. But also, I understand where Nurse is coming from, because what's the answer right now? Do you turn to Svi Mihailuk, who's been a borderline disaster over the last couple months?
That's Carlo's guy, Josh. You can't say that about him. That's Carlo's guy.
That's his guy.
Yeah, well, Utah Watanabe, I mean, he hasn't looked like the same player since coming back from the COVID protocol.
And what was he before that anyway? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I hear what you're saying, but what did you expect out of Utah? You know what I mean? Like, a couple of flashes, but let's be honest. Not a guy you want playing 35 minutes a night on a legit
team. Why I think right now this is more of a Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster front office problem than it is a Nick Nurse problem. I mean, it is a Nick Nurse problem in the sense that he's got to deal with it every night, but there is no right answer right now for Nick. You're either leaning on the six guys that you trust and you're overworking them, overusing them, or you're turning to guys that are probably going to give you subpar minutes and maybe cost you games. So I really think that the solution here, that's going to come down to what the front office does over the next few weeks leading into the trade deadline, because even if you have those two guys that I mentioned, and Trent and Birch, okay, there's the nine-man rotation. Instead of seven guys, you got nine guys, which is an NBA rotation, but things happen over the course of the year. We got Birch, his knee injury seems like it's going to be a lingering thing over the course of the year. You're going to have all sorts of things that come up where at least one or two of those guys probably aren't playing most nights. So they need to get deeper, and the only way to do that right now is in the trade market. They've got a few weeks to figure that out.
Josh, you mentioned the front office. What could they do? What kind of transaction, if you're a Raps fan and you're listening, would go down where you'd be like, man, I hope they do that? What is something that would be out there?
Oh, the sense that I get from speaking to people around the league and even people with the team is that the Raptors intend to be a buyer going into the deadline. In terms of what that means, though, like, I don't think they're in a position to buy if it comes at the expense of their long-term future. That's not going to happen. And I think the Goran Dragic situation is a good indication of that, right? Because they've got a player technically on their roster in Dragic who could be useful to them right now. Like, I think he'd help. He'd give you minutes off the bench, a reliable veteran player that can shoot a little bit, score a little bit.
Why is that ship
where they don't?
Why is that completely sailed, that ship, Josh? Like, why can't either side be professional and say, get your ass back to Toronto and play? Like, you're under contract,
man,
play.
That is,
like,
a weird one, man.
Why? I get that it's a unique scenario, and it's very uniquely NBA, for that matter, but he's still on contract. The announcement was personal reasons, you know, all good, see you later. I think we all know that that's ridiculous. Why can't a phone call be made, smarten up, let's go, and let's for the likelihood of both parties and the betterment of both parties?
The Raptors don't want him, and I know that Dragic has taken a lot of heat since the trade for his comments initially after the trade that Toronto wasn't his preferred destination, all that. But to Dragic's credit, he showed up. He was a member of this team early in the season. He was a good teammate to the young guys, a good presence in the locker room. But Dragic made it very clear. I mean, he made it very clear to us when we spoke to him for on the Raptors beat, Nikki and I. And he made it very clear to the team that he wanted to play. Like, he sees himself still as a contributor in the league. He wanted to play. The Raptors didn't want to play him. Like, they tried for a few games, and ultimately the decision they made, and this is where I was going with that point with Dragic, the decision that they made is, we're not going to waste minutes on a guy that we don't see being here in a year from now. And we always knew that was the reality with Dragic. He's a free agent coming up. Even if he played a role this year, he's not going to be here next year. They didn't want to waste those minutes on a guy that isn't part of their long-term plan. So those minutes initially were going to Banton and Flynn. Now they're going to Barnes and Siakam. And that's why I say, like, maybe there's a guy out there like an Eric Gordon, right? Like, who clearly Houston's going to be trying to move. He's not a part of their plans either. And he would help the Raptors this year, but he's also not a part of their long-term plan. So I don't see them making a move like that. I don't see them, especially if it's going to cost them something, I don't see them bringing in a guy if it's not going to be part of the long-term plan. So that, I think, is what the Raptors are thinking going to deadline, is like, who can we get that maybe raises the ceiling this year but is also going to be part of a long-term future? And that's a tough thing to, that's a tough thread to find in the NBA, to be able to check off both of those boxes.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you pull that off, and I'm curious how the organization feels about Malachi Flynn, less so Delano Banton. He's younger. He just got here. He's a second-round pick. But Flynn, you know, was a guy I think they felt like they kind of stole at the end of the first round. Four-year college guy, older kid, had a great summer league. Where is he in terms of what they actually expect? Because they're not even looking at him. Nick Nurse is not even giving him garbage time at this point. He's just not playing.
Yeah, and it started pretty much in training camp, right? Because in speaking with Malachi and his representatives, the assumption that they made, the indication that they got going to the season was that the backup point guard gig was his to lose, and then he essentially loses it in training camp. Delano Banton steals the job. So whatever Nick Nurse was looking to see from Flynn, clearly he didn't see it in training camp and hasn't seen it since. Yeah, I mean, he's gotten a few looks in the rotation. At no point, I don't think, has he really impressed with that opportunity. But at the same time, sort of get it from his standpoint, if you're Malachi Flynn, where you don't have consistent minutes. You're in there for, like, I don't know, like a look here and there once every few weeks. Like, it's hard to build any kind of momentum or rhythm in that situation. But clearly he's not doing enough right now in practice to earn those reps. Right now they're going without a backup point guard before they've turned to him, or instead of turning to him.
Yeah, it's going to be – at some point the levy's going to break, because, you know, if you're – I understand why they want to make the playoffs. They're trying to make the playoffs. You're a competitive team. It's pro sports. But how does that jive with also trying to develop and grow and think about the plan 2 or 3 years down the road? Feels like that's the crosshairs right now, Josh, specifically with Flynn and Banton, I think. Because you know they're going to get exposed, but if they're just traveling and practicing, what's the point of them even being around?
Right, and that's why it is kind of tough to understand the vision here for the rotation with Nick Nurse and the way that he's handing out these minutes versus the front office and the way they maybe would be liking Nurse to hand out these minutes. Because, yeah, they're clearly, front office is clearly prioritized development. It's one of the reasons why Goran Dragic isn't around, and one of the reasons why I question whether they're willing to go out there and throw out a draft pick or two draft picks in order to bring in immediate help. But yeah, at one point, not long ago, Malachi Flynn seemed like an important part of the future. Delano Banton is probably a part of the future. So if that is the priority, is development, then those guys need to be playing. But it's tough as a head coach. Like, you want to win these games. And Nick Nurse is a competitor. He wants to make the playoffs. So there does seem to be some sort of a divide in terms of the short-term vision right now. So I do wonder, talking about the trade deadline, is there somebody that checks off both of those boxes? Because there are a few needs on this team that need to be addressed. We talk about the center position all the time. I think they desperately need another shooter on the wing, and we've seen that recently. Like, Steve Mihailuk, Utah Watanabe are not going to give you that. Especially with Trent out, that need has been glaring. And then, do you need to bring in a backup point guard? So, I don't know. Like, the type of player, if we're talking about center position, Jakob Poeltl, like the former Raptor in San Antonio, he's a guy that's young enough that maybe he fits the long-term plan while also addressing a short-term need and raising the ceiling right now. I think those are the types of players that they're going to be looking at right now. I don't know that it's especially likely that you're going to be able to get one, especially without giving up a first-round pick. But I think that's what the hope is going into the trade deadline, that they can find a guy like that.
Right. Well, we'll see. It'll be a good one tonight in Dallas. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
Josh Lundberg, a Raptors reporter. Raps in Dallas taking on the Mavs tonight. The Leafs are in New York taking on the Rangers tonight. Come back and tee up both those games, and we're chugging towards the divisional playoff round. Al's brother, Team Al Dog,
yes.
Looking good coming off Super
Make
Wild
some
Card
golf
weekend.
Picks tomorrow.
Golf picks break. Coming up next. Absolutely. Be ready, man. This is what I did to you last week. I put you up against the wall, not much time, and Matsuyama came over the top.
I got some over the tops.
For a second
next.
Week in a row. We'll do that next. All right, so we got the old Bob Hope Classic cooking this weekend. And it's down in Palm Springs, the American Express. Pretty good field. Really good field.
Really good field. Really good field. I think you won this one last year.
I might have. Yeah, I feel good about this one. I'll let you have the first pick. I'm coming off a W with Matsuyama. I'll let you go first. How many are we doing? Three-pack or five-pack?
Five-pack, maybe there's a long shot at the end.
Okay, sounds good.
I'm going to go John Rahm.
No kidding. You have to. You got to.
You kind of do. He's at that point. He's kind of a little bit Tiger Woods, and the guy tees it up. It looks like he's going to win.
Yeah. I should have taken two out of Hawaii. He should have won the century, and then I should have had Matsuyama. I'll take Cantlay. Not going to overthink it. Patrick Cantlay, first pick.
All right. Very easy for me. This is a bit of a greasy pick. Sung J.M.
You're kidding
me.
You're kidding me. You know he's going to win at some point. You know who also is going to win at some point? Scottie Scheffler, and I'll take him. Scheffler.
Yeah. There's a little guy that I like to pick who was dialed in there last year. Bit of a great white shark down the stretch. His name's Mr. Finau.
Yes.
Finau.
Very good pick.
Finau.
I like that pick.
Right.
I'm going to go with our boy who I thought had a great week last week. I think he carries it over, Corey Connors. I'll take Corey Connors at three.
I'm going to go on a bit of a stretch here, and I'm going to take Rick Fowler.
You're kidding.
Fowler.
I'm not.
You're kidding.
I am not,
for Netflix? Do you think he shows up for Netflix?
Dude, this isn't about Netflix. Sooner or later, Rick Fowler is going to stand up there and win.
No, he won't. He's not even close. I don't see it. I'm not sure he makes the cut, let alone wins. This week, I'm on the Wolf Pack. Give me the Wolf Pack. Matthew Wolf.
You know what?
This weekend.
I'm going to go with a guy that last week had the ultimate great white shirt. Rusty Henley.
Don't do it.
Dude, I'm going with Rusty Henley.
Are you kidding me?
Again?
Skull on 18? The skull
Dude,
job.
Maybe he's fired up to win.
Wow.
Rusty Henley.
That's outrageous. That's an
The trombone.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, Noodles. I hope you're writing these down.
I am writing them down just so that if there's any problems, I'll come back to my paper.
I'm going to go Taylor Gooch. Gucci.
Oh, the Gooch.
I'm going
Gucci.
He can
dial it. He
I like
can dial
Gucci.
It.
Yeah, Gucci. Gucci in Maine.
Okay, so we've got Rahm, Im, Finau, Fowler, Henley versus Cantlay, Scheffler, Connors, Wolf, Gooch.
Yes. You want to
take
wanna...
a long shot, Hazy. Take a long shot. Sepp Straka?
Well, I was going to say, does Will Zalatoris count as a long
shot? No, he doesn't. No.
I don't know.
Sahith Tigala is. Hank Labodia is.
Yeah. Okay. I don't care. Is Tringali a long shot?
He kind of is. I'll take Labodia. You take Tringali.
Okay, done. Labodia. Lock it in.
And Tringali.
Yeah,
all right.
Tringali. I think he shows. Shout out. All right, those are the picks. They're in. We can't wait for it. The American Express. Leafs in action. Raptors in action. It'll be a fun one. We'll break it all down tomorrow. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at...
The trombone will dial it in. 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.